Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is ex-Dublin football legend Barney Rock, who is also the father of Dublin footballer Dean Rock. Barney has one All-Ireland medal, four Leinster titles, one National Football League medal and three All-Stars to his name. We'll be talking about Barney's time playing in a Dublin jersey, growing up and much more. Sit back and enjoy the show. Barney, come here. Thanks a million for joining me today. Now I appreciate your time. How are things with you?
Keeping good, yes. For the weather makes us keep well.
It does.
So it's ideal. You know, don't mind. It's good. Once this lasts, this will be a scorcher up here for the next 5 or 10 days. So we'll see what happens. And how are you? Keeping? You're looking great.
All's good with me, thank God. No fear of me. I was out in Muckross there in Killarney a while ago. I went out for a walk, so
enjoying. You know, I'm not involved in football anymore. I've got away. I was with Ballymun for the last 5-6 years. So I just said it's time to just leave it and let somebody else at it. And I just come and go to matches whenever. You know, go to the intercounty matches. So from that point of view, relaxed. I can play a bit of golf. And you know, I'm not cut for time, because being involved with club teams, you get cut for a lot of time.
I don't think people on the outside realise like the work and dedication it takes, or doesn't.
Oh yeah, no. Listen, with Ballymun, we would have been training 4 times a week. We'd have went Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, we might have a match on Saturday now, and in between, lads would have been doing their own strength and condition, whether it be weights. They might go to the club to do it. They could also maybe do it at home. So present day footballers and even the intercounty lads now at the minute, it really is the GAA don't realise how much effort they put into it, because they're training every night. So even though Dublin played last weekend Sunday, they still have to get themselves ready for a match on Saturday.
And recovery, you know, on top of that.
Recovery. And you know, the recovery, you've still got to work. So these lads are still going out to work and doing all that. So none of them are easy going. Like, they might have a job that suits, but it still takes time and they still have to put money on the table.
Absolutely, and I don't think people realise that. I like to start off by just asking my guests about when growing up. Where did you grow up in Glasnevin, or was it?
I would have grown up in Griffith Drive, which is Finglas East.
I was
caught between three clubs in. I was caught between Ballymun, Nafina and Earnsyle. I could have played for any one of the three.
Did they split?
No, it's just whichever way it is, just the way it drew, you were able to pick from. You know, like it depended really on the school you went to. And I went to a school called Sacred Heart. And they were more Ballymun than they were Nafina or Earnsyle. And that was it. It was only a new school that was developed, and I was lucky enough. You know, all my best friends would have been from there, fellas. We would have grew up. There would have been about 6 of us that played with Dublin from the school team, and you know, as we went on, it was just nice and committed, and hurling and football club time.
And you, I suppose, like you said, there, college and school and stuff. How important do you think that I suppose college is, and maybe not when you were playing, but now, like, do you think that, I suppose, college football, it's in one way it's kind of vital for the player that are playing with county level and underage?
Yeah, well, when we went to college, we never went, it wasn't third level, it was just ordinary school level. We finished up around 17, 18, and most fellas back in my time would have been sent out to work.
Yeah,
and only the good lads that would have had that sort of brain to move on, he would have went to third level. Whether he wanted to be a teacher or a coach, and that's where they would have went. So we never really got into that. But I have seen, say, in 2010, say only with Dublin, that when Niall Mina got involved with DCU, it was at that stage then you could see the development on the Dublin players. You know, not alone them, but other players that would have come, and certainly known it through Dean and James McCarthy, and that they would have went in there they would have done their college work. I think they won the freshers the first year, and then all of a sudden they were doing strength and conditioning, and they were getting stronger. You know, it didn't happen overnight. It might have happened over 2 years, and then all of a sudden Michael Murphy would have come in, and he was involved. They were all around the same age. They would have played against each other in a 21, the last 21 All-Ireland final back in 2010, and you could see the development then moving on. And I think the great thing about college football, it's another step for the inter-county player.
Yeah.
And you know, not just for the inter-county player, but for development of fellas who might not have played minor or under 20s at the time, you know, but who have developed well and have moved on and are now inter-county players.
And that's a great point there about people who haven't, that weren't playing, that they played with the college. And especially, you know, my level, it's when I was playing, and even I see there with the lads, my friends, you'll be inside and you'll be playing a fella from your own club, and it's belts and shoulders, and you're on the pitch, and next thing you're training that night with the club. So it's good in one way. You were I was reading you were involved in soccer when you were growing up, were you?
I was. Back then we really hadn't got that much. We were just on the road. We'd either play soccer on the road. I played with Ray O'Brien on the road, Fran O'Brien. They were played for Ireland internationals, you know, and it was a situation where the street leagues would have been there, and you would have played with a local soccer team. But also Gaelic football was always the centerpiece of my style. But like, we would have just played for the sake of, we'd be out on the road and we would be kicking football under the lights. And that would go on maybe from 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and you might be playing till about 11 before your mother and father would say, get into bed, you know. So it was just part of it. But I was lucky enough that I played with 3 or 4 different club teams up here, but probably the famous one of them all would have been Stella Maris.
Yeah.
Of which I won a Leinster Youth medal, and I also got an opportunity to play for Ireland under 17s as a sub goalkeeper, you know, and against Wales. So that was nice. That was around 1978.
It was football. You went down that road, I suppose. I suppose we were talking about club football there. Did Ballymun kind of split away in the 60s?
They would have. I think whatever happened, there was a little bit of an argument at one stage, and probably there was a lot of country lads would have played with Ballymun. And back in the mid 60s, Nafina, there was a bit of a split. So Nafina, some of their people went and formed Nafina, and we ended up, you know, we wouldn't have known. We were only about 7 or 8 at that stage, so we were just playing football and that. But then the split came, so Nafina ended up going down towards Glasnevin, and Ballymun, it used to be Kickham's Ballymun, CJ Kickham's, but then they changed to Ballymun Kickham's. So but we had a good underage structure there, because we really came from the school, and a lot of good lads played together.
Bring me back to, I suppose, your minor debut for Dublin. Was it 78, your minor debut?
Yeah, I played 78. We won Leinster. We had a good run this. And then all of a sudden we beat Wexford in the final, which people might say, oh, Wexford. But Wexford had a good football team back then, because it was based on their college down in New Ross and that. But we bet them in the final. We bet Tyrone then in the All-Ireland semi-final in a fantastic match. And then we played Mayo, and Mayo beat us. But on that particular day, we were 6 points up with 8 minutes to go, and Big Tom Bourne came on and was involved in getting a hat-trick of goals. I think he scored 2 and gave another goal to somebody else, and we were beaten by 4 points. But that was 78, and then to make matters worse,
I know what you're going to say next.
The Kerry lads came afterwards and bet Dublin by 17 points in the senior match. So it was a bad day all round, Ian.
A bad day all round. When you were coming into that setup, I suppose, when you were a minor, you were coming in, who would have been, I suppose, on the team then? Was Jimmy Keaveney, would he have been kind of
Jimmy would have been senior
when you were coming in?
when I was coming in, Jimmy would have been there. Jimmy had to retire because Jimmy played in 79 and he was sent off in 1979 in the Leinster final. And only because of the Pope, he would have played in the All-Ireland final. Really? Because that year in 79, the Pope was coming to Ireland. And what happened was the Pope came, they moved the All-Ireland final a week forward, right? Normally, when you're sent off, back then you'd get a month or you get 2 months. And what happened was he was given 2 months, but had the Pope not been coming, he would have been able to play in the final because it would have been 8 weeks after it. But because the Pope came, so we blamed that one on the Pope losing that All-Ireland for Dublin, 79. But we won the minor, Ian, and we beat the Kerry lads in the minor final. So I just wanted to say that to you.
I knew that was coming next. Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, ianoconnell321, or drop me an email at my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with ex-Dublin football legend Barney Rock. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show. Or you can now get this interview, as well as all the shows I've done so far, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Did you, did you have anyone that you, not even just on the Dublin team, or was there anyone that you kind of looked up to when you were breaking into the senior team?
You know, listen, the senior team, the strength of Dublin came in 74 when everything changed, you know, and we all were brought up in the hype. I played under 14. We were involved in a good college system. So football was in your blood and we were playing well with them. And then the minors came along. And I suppose the ones I would always be looked up to because I was a free taker was Jimmy Keaveney. Right, and then Brian Mullins from Dublin. But I also would have looked up to a fella called Tony McTague, which I met. He was a fantastic free taker, left and right for Offaly. And I met him actually last week at a golf classic. So I was delighted to have done that. But Jimmy would have been the one I would have looked up to. And back then, and unfortunately, in 79, he retired after the 79 final, and I just came along then in 1980 as an 18 year old coming into the senior squad.
Did you suffer knee ligaments injury when you were coming in? I was reading.
Well, I tell you what happened was that I ended up playing in we were due to play in a Burn Cup match, and Ballymun were playing the 7-a-side out in UCD. So that was on the Sunday. We trained on the Saturday morning. So I decided I'd go out, but Ballymun were stuck for somebody, and I went out and I played. And next of all, I got myself caught in a tackle, and ended up having to go back to Kevin Heffernan the following day. Said, "Listen, Kevin, I think there's a problem with my knee. I got injured, Joe." So I had to tell him I got injured in training. I couldn't say I got injured playing a 7-a-side match, but that was it. So it knocked me out possibly for about 4 or 5 months, you know, at that particular stage. But we were beaten by Offaly then in the Leinster final that year in 1980.
What was the just to touch on that back when you were playing, when compared to now, what was recovery like then, and what was the process?
Yeah, I suppose recovery was rest. It was medial ligaments I got, so they weren't the cruciate as such, you know. So Ray Moran was looking after me, who's the head surgeon now. He was Dr. Stevens Hospital. I went to him, and there was no real plans to put on. He put strapping on and just left it at time healing. That's all it was. But thankfully, when I came back, it never really affected me after that. So I was lucky enough. But I suppose time level, there wasn't as many matches back then, so you didn't miss it as much.
Were injuries as common back then compared to today? Like, you often see like smaller injuries on foot and knee. Were injuries as common back when you were playing?
Well, I'd say most of the injuries back then would have been heavy tackles. doing his shoulders. You know, I broke my collarbone in 96. You know, and there would be an ankles, because I think the tackles are a little more harder then than they are now. I don't think fellas go in and are able to hit shoulder to shoulder. And sometimes you might have to watch, it might be the elbow. And sometimes the referees didn't see everything. But now they seem to see a lot of things, you know, whether it's the fourth official telling them in his ear or something like that. But, so you don't really get away with what we had to put up with back in the 80s.
What you talking about refereeing and stuff, what do you make of the, I suppose, the rule that came in there not too long ago, the mark ball, like from kickouts and when you're kicking it into the full forward line?
Yeah, I think the mark from the kickout is good, but I think the keepers are so good now that they don't tend not to kick it out too fellas. I'd say if you get five kickouts into midfield back then, you know, it would be... or now, you know, that's it. Other than that, they're playing short and they're keeping possession. But just going back to our time, the two most famous catches I've ever seen was Shawnee Walsh's one, Dublin against Kerry. Fantastic catch, you know. Another one, I just seen it last night with Sean Doherty in the 1977 All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, when Ogie took the free from outside the 50, and somehow all you could see as he's going into goal, Doherty coming from the side, and I don't know how he got him, and he caught the ball from going over, could have went over the bar, and from his catch and the ball playing out, Dublin went down and got a goal, whereas had that ball gone over the bar, it would have been, Dublin might not have won that match in 77.
A goal that I suppose is still talked about today in the 83 All-Ireland, was it when you scored, you lobbed the keeper?
Yeah, you know, it's probably just like something, it just happens, instinct. You know, I was a habit, I used to play full forward with the club, and I had an awful habit of running and jumping and trying to catch the keeper's kickouts, you know, because some of them might not have the best of kickouts. And every time I caught it, I seemed to kick it over, to kick it back over his head. So on that particular day, when I did catch the ball in front of Seamus McHugh, I knew the keeper was off his line, so I had the aid of the breeze. So, I just put it back. I tell the Galway lads I was only kicking it back to the goalkeeper, but in reality, I just said I'd have a go, and thankfully it bounced into the net.
Yeah, the win behind you. That game there was with Galway, I suppose there was a couple of red cards, and it kind of made a challenge for yourself and the team. What do you remember, I suppose, from that game? What's your memory?
I think we were all unfortunate, because both teams played, well, certainly we played our best game ever against Cork and Parky Keeve after the replay. Fantastic game. The best game as a team we would have played. But on that particular morning at the All-Ireland, we would have went to the game, we would have went up to the Papal Cross, we were only talking about earlier on, and we just for a walk, just to get outside the city. And then we went in, but the weather was unbelievable. You had hailstones, you had rain, you had sunshine, you had wind. So really, you had four seasons in probably a 3 or 4 hour period. And the referee had a tough job, because even though you put a ball down to kick it from a free, Blaine, down towards the Hill 16, by the time you ran up to try and kick the ball had ran on about 10 yards. So there was loads of occasions like that. And I suppose if it was played the following Sunday, there would have been nobody sent off. But it was just the conditions. And then, you know, Lord of Mercy, and Brian at that stage, Brian Talty was a good friend of his. He grabbed him by the back of the jersey, and Brian just swung around and he caught him. And Ray Hazley, then Tomás Tierney, they were in a bit of a schmozzle. I think both of them were unlucky to be sent off. But I think at that stage, the referee, you know, probably lost and wanted to cool everything down. And then we ended up then with 12 men against 14, but I don't think anyone will ever beat that record of winning All-Ireland football with 12 men.
No, and as you said there about being down men, how powerful is, I wanted to ask you this question, how powerful is, I suppose, you see these days, Hill 16 and when Kerry are playing Dublin and the passion, how powerful is, I suppose, Hill 16 when you are playing for Dublin and you are down? How much of a drive do they give you when, as a player?
Yeah, listen, it's always, ever since the 70s, Joe has always been there, and people think it's Dublin's right, but there's loads of opposition go there too. Yeah. It's much better when the wind is blown down towards the Davitt end, because you can hear the volume of noise going down. But when the wind is blown over the hill and away, it's not as vocal. But, Joe, you do notice it. And back then, we would have played our league matches in it, and there might only be about 12,000-14,000 people, and you would always know Hill 16 when the people are there, right? And there was a lot of people who would have went to Hill 16 rather than to the stand then. So it's worth a couple of pints to them, you know. The Dublin crowd, they didn't stop Shani O'Shea kicking that ball over the bar. They might have tried last year in the semi-final, so on that end, what a kick from him. But it's just the way it goes. It does help, but it's not the winning and losing of a game.
It's, as you said, there's loads of other opposition fans around the ground as well. People, your family in general has a long, I suppose, connection with Croke Park. It goes back to the 1930s. Your father and grandfather were heavily, I suppose, involved. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, my grandfather would have been William Rock. He would have lived in Russell Avenue, which is only a stone throw, 100 yards away from the gates of Croke Park. His son John lived at the far side of the stadium, and his entrance would have been in at the canal end back then. And he used to look after the scoreboards. But my grandfather would have been the man with the bowler hat, and his tradition would have been to look after the footballs and the hurling slitters. The day of matches, and the great thing would have been on All Ireland final day, he would have dressed up with his black suit and his top hat, and would have went out and handed the balls to the Archbishop, who then would have thrown the ball in. So, and any time a ball would have went wide or over the bar, he would be throwing the balls out of the canal end. But the other uncle, he would have been involved. Both of them would have done the scoreboards, both ends. And the other man, Uncle Joe, he would have been involved in the dressing room. So he looked after all the dressing rooms for possibly about 65, 70 years. Well, my own father would have done the styles. So it was known back in 78 when we were playing the minor match that he would have left the style, came, looked at the match, and would have went back to the style. And the same with 79. So it's as most fathers would do. So, but no, I worked there probably. The ones I always remembered it was the 1977 semi final when I was put in. It, back then, you would be telling people where to go in the Hogan stand or whatever. So I was only small, at probably 15, but anyone to come see where's M and where's this, you just guide them towards it. So that was the only time that I worked there.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to the show. I'm here today with ex-Dublin footballer Barney Rock. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show. Or you'll be able to get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or whatever platform you get your podcasts on. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Did you ever find yourself as a young fella making your way in towards the dressing room?
Well, I was lucky with that. Back in 73, I would have got into the dressing room when Cork were playing Galway. My father would have been going down, and I was only 12, 13 at that stage, so he said, come along. And we would have went in and sat in the corner of the dressing room. Cork won it. And there was I sitting, and there I got nicks and socks from Ray Cummins and Dennis Long. So no doubt I went home that night and I was putting them on, but you couldn't see any part of my skin from the bottom, from my hips down. So it was a great thrill. And then the following year, I was in the dressing room for the semi-final when Dublin played their semi-final to get to the All-Ireland. So he played Cork in that semi-final. So, and little did I think 4 years later that I would be involved with the Dublin team.
Was there any I suppose connection to Croke Park back when, I suppose, or did the family know anyone back Bloody Sunday when that happened?
And I think my grandfather would have known somebody, you know, but I didn't, you know, he never really said that much about it. So it was more of a quiet end of things.
Yeah, yeah. Before we finish up, I just want to talk about a bit, I suppose, today and these days about football, and you see other teams coming through. How do you think the championship is going to play out this year? What teams do you think are looking good coming through?
Well, I think you'd have to say that Mayo are looking good, Joe, you know, in one sense. You know, like I didn't mind them being beaten by Roscommon, Joe. You know? They got a bit of freshness back in. They won a good league. They were the best team in the league. So they deserve to win it. I think Galway will be waiting on them. I think Kerry will be there. And I think Dublin, if they could just win a couple of games in a row with a bit of style, they would be there as well. But I think of the three in front, I think it's the front runners will be Mayo, Galway and Kerry.
Yeah, yeah. It's looking that way. What's your thoughts on David Clifford?
David Clifford, you know, Kerry always produced these players. Back in our time, it was Morris Fitz. You know, he was fantastic. And Mikey just before that when we were playing. And then all of a sudden you come along and you'd Declan O'Sullivan, a footballer that I used to love watching. And, you know, he was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden you had the Gooch. And now you've got, you know, Cliff. You know, and he is a phenomenal player. As a young age, all you have to do is look at four minor All-Irelands, you know, and all of a sudden thankfully Dublin were around and they didn't let him win too many senior All-Irelands up to last year, because he probably would have had outdone everybody. But he's a young lad, you know, himself and the brother are two very, very good players. And it was, you know, for the likes of the Fawcett Club last year, you know, we were down there with the golf in Killarney, on Matney's Spine, and you know, we drove up by the club, Fawcett Club, and tremendous. And I never realised was so close to Killarney town itself. So it's, but he has everything, both feet, can catch the ball, and has a lovely sidestep. And you know, what a wonderful player to go and watch.
He is. Hopefully there'll be another few coming to him. Barney, come here. Thanks so much for your time now, and I really appreciate it. So thanks for hopping on.
No problem. It's always a joy to meet you, especially at all our golf outings and golf classics. And we're back down there again this year. I think it's in October. So we really look forward to it. So we might bring Sam down.
We might, or you might be bringing him home.
No thanks, problem. Barney. All right, Ian. God bless.
Take care. It's a rivalry between Dublin and Kerry, who first played each other in 1892 when Dublin beat Kerry 1-4 to 3 points. It is considered to be one of the biggest rivalries in Gaelic games, with many considering it to be the greatest of all time. Whether that be a league match under the floodlights in Tralee, or a clash between the two GA giants on All-Ireland final day on a summer's day with the smell of fresh cut grass at the GA headquarters, that being Croke Park in Dublin. From Dean Rock himself breaking Kerry hearts, putting the ball over the bar, or our own Shawnee Shea recently getting revenge, putting the ball between the posts to beat Dublin to secure Kerry's place in an All-Ireland final.
It's 76 minutes gone here in Croke Park. Wherever you are, listen throughout the world. This kick could decide whether Kerry are in an All-Ireland final or not in normal time.
Hill 16 is erupt.
Oh, Hill 16. It's blue. They're shouting. There's foghorns. There's every sort of thing up there.
Johnny O'Shea.
Oh, can Johnny quieten the hill? It's hard to quieten the hill, says he. Now, Johnny O'Shea, steadying himself on the run up, strikes the ball, hits it with all his heart. Where does it go? It's over! It's over! It's over! The cross over! Kerry are in an All Ireland final!
It's over!
It's over! Let's go! Kerry are in it!
Oh,
you fire! Amherst, we did it! Up Kinmare! We're in an All Ireland final, Amherst!
The answer!
Could Johnny
do what Stephen Coxon does? And the answer is yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Obama said, can we do it? We can. Yes, we can. Kerry are an All-Ireland final. Kerry, 114. Dublin, 113, Ambrose.
Absolutely. Breathtaking stuff. A credit to both sides. But what a pair Sean O'Shea is. That was a difficult kick. Into the breeze, into the fire. And then he split the upright.
And look at it. Paddy Andrews. Paddy Andrews is behind me here, and he's in a state of flux. He doesn't know what's happening, Ambrose. The delight. It was an epic, and my voice is gone, Ambrose.
Now, I'm going to bring you through a couple of the standout moments and some of the memorable moments over the last couple of years between Kerry and Dublin. 1975 to 1979, the greatest era. Their first meeting in a decade and their first All-Ireland final clash in 20 years. Reigning champions Dublin faced a young and inexperienced Kerry team on the 28th of December 1975. The Dubs were stunned after just 3 minutes when John Egan pounced for the opening goal. At halftime, Kerry led 1-6 to 4 points. Jimmy Keneveny points from place balls kept the Dubs in touch to some degree in the second half, but Kerry always had that extra gear that they could use, and a Joe O'Driscoll goal sealed a surprise 2-12 to 11 points victory. Kerry captain Mickey Ned O'Sullivan was unable to accept the Sam Maguire as he was knocked unconscious during the game and had to be hospitalised. 1984 to 1985, Kerry dominate. After a 5-year absence, Dublin and Kerry faced each other on the 23rd of September 1984. Dublin were the reigning All-Ireland champions and were well fancied to retain the title against Kerry. Against Kerry had lost the 1982 All-Ireland final to Offaly and the 1983 Munster final to Cork. Bizarrely, an article in the RTE Guide described the Kerry squad as a cowardly blend of experienced players. Kerry led 7-3 at half-time and 6 points when Barry Rock scored Dublin's goal. Kerry responded by stretching on again. Dublin's return of 1-6 from only 2 scoring forwards was their lowest against Kerry since 1985. The 14-1-6 victory gave Kerry the centenary All-Ireland title. Colm Cooper goal, 2009 All-Ireland quarter-final. The 2009 quarter-final between Dublin and Kerry was billed as a meeting of All-Ireland winners, only it was Dublin many more were expecting to make the breakthrough. Pat Gilroy's side had collected their 4th Leinster title on the spin after defeating Clare in the final. Kerry were coming into the game off the back of a tricky quarter run where Tomás O'Shea and Colm Cooper had been dropped. Kerry were denied the 3 in a row a year earlier by Tyrone, and many felt that we had seen the best of the Grey Kingdom team. Dublin were red hot favourites, but just like that, the game was over. Kerry had silenced the hill after just 40 seconds when Colm slotted underneath Cluxton before going on to annihilate the Dubs, while Kerry would go on to collect another Sam Maguire title.
Free to Kerry. They have spluttered through the summer. Could easily have been beaten and should have been beaten by Sligo. Struggled for long periods against Antrim, but this man has been the key, Paul Galvin. Darrow Shea has been prominent as well. That goes away from O'Sullivan, who's been marked by Dennis Bastic. Goal chance here for Kerry. It's the Gooch, and it's a goal. The first goal that Dublin have conceded in this year's championship after 40 seconds, and this man does come alive when he comes to Croke Park.
Well, is this what's going to set up the classic that we're all hoping for? Great work inside, and look, the Gooch isn't going to miss from there, no matter what his form is like. He loved this ground. The overlap is perfect, and the finish is grand. There's the link, Jara. Lovely work. Cluxton puts a lot of pressure, but the Gooch can handle it.
Mike McCarthy involved in the build-up to that, very involved with the pass that put the Gooch through, who had scored 5 points from play in his matches so far this summer. Well, a goal already, and it is just the start that Kerry wanted. Kerry playing in Croke Park in August, we're told a different proposition, problems for Dermot Connolly.
Now we're going to go for our last step break. Don't go anywhere, we'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. Kevin McManaman goal, 2011 All-Ireland Final. The next meeting between the two sides came in 2011 in the All-Ireland as Dublin firstly qualified for the Showpiece Decider following years of heartbreak. They probably should have made the final, maybe even won the whole lot in 2010, but for a vastly experienced Cork side, who, in hindsight, knew it was last chance saloon for many of their team. Kerry looked to be coasting in the 2011 final as the game entered the final 10 minutes. They led by 2 points until super sub Kevin finished to the side net to set up a grandstand finish.
Nicely for them, but a goal for Dublin would unsettle all of that. It's a free kick. Kian O'Sullivan. Under 7 minutes to go. Alan Brogan sent in. McManaman dodging. McManaman scoring! There's a point between the teams, and Kevin McManaman has kicked a beauty and sent Dublin fans into raptures. 64 minutes on the clock. Beautiful pass. Wonderful work. Precision here by McManaman. He made a difference in the semi-final. And when he took the pass from Brogan here, he's made a difference in the final itself. Rounding Declan O'Sullivan and beating Brendan Keeley. 1-10 to 1-9. It ain't over yet.
Wonderful conviction that time from, it must be said, from Kevin McManaman. What a bad mistake further out the field by Declan O'Sullivan, who conceded the possession far too easily.
Stephen Cluxton point, 2011 All-Ireland Final. Following Kevin's goal, the action continued as a war entailed to see who would go on to come on top in this battle. In the end, it was Kevin who won the vital free kick that gave Dublin's talisman goalkeeper Stephen Cluxton the chance to go up and kick the winning score and give Dublin their first All-Ireland title in 6 years.
Kerry back defending, McManaman attacking, and he's kicked, and it's a free in. A free kick to win the All-Ireland, and they're going to bring up their goalkeeper Stephen Cluxton to see if he can put this one over the bar and win the title for Dublin for the first time since 1995. What drama in Croke Park.
Well, it's extraordinary. And I've seen said before, and I took and talked about Stephen Cluxton, talked about his importance to the Dublin team, and talked about his ability to accurately kick frees from distance. Now he has the most important kick of his career for Dublin, for the supporters. Let's see, can he hold his nerve?
Stephen Cluxton, the fans try to hold their nerves in his 55th championship match. 15 points in his career so far. He's already got one today. The distance with the angle, about 45 metres. Here he comes to win the All-Ireland. Cluxton, he's put it over the bar, and Dublin are in front by 112 to 111. Cluxton the hero, and the 2 minutes of added time has been played, and we now wait for the referee's whistle. Referee looks at his watch. Kerry, it's all over.
Alan Brogan point, 2015 All-Ireland Final. What an introduction, the hill erupts. The 2015 All-Ireland between Dublin and Kerry was a drab encounter, played in torrential rain. However, the game is remembered for Alan Brogan's last involvement in a Dublin jersey, as he carried the ball from one end of the field to the other before securing another All-Ireland title for Dublin. What made the moment all that sweeter was that Brogan had previously planned to retire in 2014. Until Jim McGuinness's Donegal side put paid to those plans, he clearly made the right decision to come back for one more year, as his score was to be the clincher in that final.
Alan Brogan picking up his first possession, all the way down to his younger brother Bernard. Back to Alan again. Two former footballers of the year, the Brogans. Has options right and left. Needs to make his mind up, and his mind was made up to kick it with his left and to boot it over the bar. What an introduction. The hill erupts.
David Clifford has been sensational since he's made his breakthrough into the Kerry senior panel. Since making his debut in 2018, Clifford has scored 24 goals and 234 points in his 57 league and championship appearances. He has registered 20 goals and 139 points from play, plus 4 penalties, 85 frees and 10 marks. He is averaging 5.4 points per game. So far in 2023, Clifford has scored 47 of Kerry's 195 points, which equals to 24.1%. This is slightly lower on his percentage from the last year, which was 25.2%, although he has missed two games so far compared to one in 2022. Now, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show and I appreciate you tuning in as always. I hope you're all having a great week. Now, before we finish up tonight, I just want to say something from a personal perspective, and I'm sure I speak for everyone here on Radio Kerry. I want to say rest in peace to Chrissy Dignam, and my thoughts and condolences and prayers are with everybody, his family and friends and everybody close to him that knew him. I think when any person from Ireland like that dies, I know it's everybody that dies is obviously heartbreaking, but it's an Irish singer, I think there's something more special about that, because we're obviously so big into our music here and in Ireland, so it's awful sad. And we've seen he was a warrior all through his time battling cancer. So I want to just say rest in peace, Chrissy Dignam, and hope all is okay with his family and friends, and my thoughts and prayers are with him. A massive thanks to Barney for coming on today and sharing his story. I really appreciate it, and I hope you all enjoyed the show. Now, if you have any suggestions or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, ianoconnell321. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself. And now, to play us out tonight, I'm going to play a clip from a song that Christy done that I really loved. Obviously, his songs with Aslan are all massive hits, and he's such a big part of that group, known worldwide with them. But my personal favourite was when he was on The Late Late Show 6 years ago with Finbar Fury. They done together, they done the Green Fields of France, and it was absolutely amazing. It was my favourite clip of Christy that I've ever seen. It's just, you could see they both had their eyes closed. And I go back to what I said a minute ago, when a big musician dies, it means a lot to people all over, not just Ireland but all over the world. They had their eyes closed and you could see how much it meant to them. So I'm going to play you out to that, and once again, rest in peace to Christy Dignam.